and recommendations on ways to reform Ohio's foster care system to provide better outcomes for children and for families. This is the report that is being released today. And I want, first of all, thank the committee for all the work that the council has done. Despite the pandemic, this council continued to do just absolutely amazing work, holding meetings all over the state of Ohio and gathering information. A little over a year ago, Lieutenant Governor Houston and I announced the formation of the Children's Services Transformation Advisory Council to conduct a full review of the foster care system in the state of Ohio. In less than a decade, Ohio has seen a nearly 30% increase in the number of children coming into foster care, 30%. Much of this is fueled by Ohio's drug epidemic. In fact, a survey conducted by the Public Children's Services Association of Ohio shows that half of all children in foster care are there because of the addiction of one or both parents. These children have incredibly complex needs, but the number of specialized foster caregivers is simply not keeping up with those needs. As a result, more than 1 in 8 foster youth live in a congregate care setting and not with a family. That rate is nearly 50% for teenagers over 15. Every year, nearly 1,000 Ohio children, our children, age out of foster care. That's a nice way of saying that they didn't have parents. They were never adopted. They turned 18. Too many of these youth will experience homelessness, other poor outcomes that limit their success. Although there's certainly some great examples of some amazing success from some of these children. Our caseworkers, who are one of the most important factors for the outcome of foster care, frankly, are just burdened, overburdened, with high caseloads, mounting paperwork. To better understand these challenges and the others facing the children's services system, council members, as I said, travel throughout the state of Ohio, holding 10 forums to hear directly from those impacted by the foster care system. They heard not only from officials in the foster care system, but they heard from former foster care youth. And that was very, very impactful and very significant. They also heard directly from foster parents. And that also was very important. Hundreds of Ohioans shared their firsthand experiences with the children's services system and their recommendations for improving it. In all, nearly 1,500 Ohioans engaged with the advisory council through testimony and attendance. I want to thank all of the brave Ohioans who came forward to share their personal story. I want to thank you for using your voice to advocate for Ohio's foster youth. One of the most common messages shared in the forums was the importance of keeping children at the center of all decisions. We must keep the focus on the kids. Too often, many told us, the system focuses on the adults in the room and not on the children. From participant testimony, the council developed 37 separate recommendations across 7 big categories. Those categories are prevention, workforce, casework practice, kinship, foster care, adoption, and the justice system itself. The recommendations, when implemented, will help to refocus our children's services system on children and on their best interests. Some recommendations will require funding and legislation, and I look forward to working with the members of the General Assembly to accomplish these recommendations. Others, however, can be implemented by the Department of Jobs and Family Services. In fact, efforts are already underway within the Department of Jobs and Family Services on this important work, with Director Kim Hall, who will discuss this in a few minutes. As a U.S. Senator, my amendment to the Adoption and Safe Families Act made the child's health and safety the paramount factor in all placement decisions. And that must remain our North Star as we move forward, because thousands of children depend upon us. In fact, right now, nearly 16,000 children are in foster care across our state. Among them are more than 3,000 children eligible for adoption, many of them teens. Each of these children deserve to grow up in a loving home. Each and every child deserves to grow up in that loving home. Though change won't happen overnight, change must happen. I truly believe that if we implement these 37 recommendations, more children, many more children, will have a shot at living their American dream. Let me close by thanking again the members of the Children's Services Transformation Advisory Council for their very hard work during this pandemic. They put a lot of time and effort into the forums, and they continue to prioritize this task, even as the pandemic pulled them in other directions. To each and every one of them, thank you. Your efforts will absolutely change the lives of so many Ohio children. Now I'd like to introduce Christy Burry, co-chair of the Children's Services Transformation Advisory Council and director of our Office of Children's Services Transformation within the Ohio Department of Jobs and Family Services. Christy, you're on.
Thank you, Governor. We are very excited about the release of the final report today. Governor DeWine, I just want to thank you for your commitment to improving the lives of children and families in Ohio. I have never been prouder of an administration's leadership and dedication to helping vulnerable children and youth and strengthening families and communities throughout Ohio. So thank you. The Advisory Council was charged with an extremely important and very much needed task, and they embraced it not only willingly, but enthusiastically, and I could not be more grateful and impressed. The Advisory Council they were able to use their special expertise and their own personal experiences, which was very vital to this entire process. So each of them really provided a unique perspective that helped ensure that the voices of all Ohioans involved in the children's services system were heard. And that makes these recommendations even more meaningful and impactful. So let's talk about the recommendations a bit. As the governor mentioned, the members of the advisory council landed on a series of recommendations across the entire continuum of the system. So prevention, workforce, practice, kinship, foster care, adoption, and juvenile justice. And as we traveled the state at the end of last year and the beginning of this year before the pandemic really hit us hard, we realized and we know that any transformation has to address needed changes in all of these critical areas. The Advisory Council also feels strongly that any transformation of Ohio's children's services system must include goals and priorities that create a culture of inclusion and formalize equity strategies to really address disproportionality of children and families of color within our system. So with that, just a few highlights from the recommendations in the prevention space, a really strong, knowing that we need a strong focus on supporting family members, parents in their own communities, making sure that we have the right services and supports to help them. So Children's Services doesn't even have to be involved. And if the system does, then we can quickly ensure that they have the right level of support in their own communities. In the workforce area, the recommendations really revolve around higher learning and ensuring that we're doing all that we can to work with universities and colleges to prepare students as they move into opportunities to come into this field and be prepared. Once they're in the system, making sure that we're reducing organizational red tape and extra or duplicated work that keeps caseworkers away from doing the work that we really need them to do out in the field with children and families. And with that includes making sure that they have all of the right technology technology and supports and resources to do their job more effectively and efficiently. With practice, we know that the recommendations that this advisory council landed on revolved around some of the front door decision making with screening decisions when reports are first coming to our hotlines across the state. We know that we have to move toward more consistency and taking a deeper dive at looking at that. And then most importantly, with this practice area, moving forward with instituting a statewide ombudsman in Ohio to ensure that we have an independent entity in Ohio for foster youth and caregivers and others to voice concerns. With the kinship action area, I'm excited that one of the main priorities here is just an agreement as to how important family of origin and connections, even non-relative connections, are to youth. And we have to ensure that we're prioritizing that from day one of getting involved. And then with that, ensuring that we have the right level of supports and services and training for our kinship caregivers to have a more balanced approach with what we offer and provide foster parents. With the foster care action area, this is where we really are able to key in on the voices of children that are in our system. They have a right to be at the table and share and be part of the decision making for their futures. It includes ensuring that kids in our system have a normal childhood, as normal as possible, despite all of that they're going through. So we included things such as establishing a foster youth bill of rights, also establishing a foster parent or resource family bill of rights as well, and ensuring that we are, when foster parents who are a valuable member of the team when Children's Services is involved, that they are informed, that we're transparent, that they are at the table as an important resource. And they love these kids, they're bonded with these kids, and that's why we need them to do this important work. In adoption, we have some great work happening across the state with our Dave Thomas Foundation and Wendy's Wonderful Kids Recruiters, as well as our youth-centered permanency roundtables that are all about permanency and working with youth to ensure that those kids that cannot reunify with their families, that we are able to help them find families. And as the governor said, to ensure that they do not age out of the system with the right level of supports and connections. And then with juvenile justice, just a couple highlights there. This work moving forward into this next phase is going to be very collaborative with the Supreme Court of Ohio. We really want to partner with the Ohio Association of Juvenile Judges and the Ohio Prosecuting Attorney Association to address some areas as it relates to strengthening accountability with timelines, looking for those best practices with our guardian ad litems and CASA volunteers to ensure that we're expanding and building on those good practices. So I just wanted to highlight just a few in each of those areas. In the end, we landed on 37 total recommendations. So we have a really, which is manageable. There's a lot of work to do and a lot of change needed, and this advisory council did a really good job of narrowing down where we felt we could, we really needed to focus first to be able to make the changes. So this will really allow us to now quickly shift in to the implementation phase and with this work. So thank you again to our advisory council members for all of your commitment and your work in this area. One of our advisory council members is Melinda Haggerty. Melinda has both personal and professional experience with foster care and adoption, and she has graciously agreed to share a few words about her experience with being appointed to this advisory council. Melinda.
Well, thank you, Christy. Thanks everybody for having me this morning. I'd first like to start off with thanking Governor DeWine and his entire amazing team for giving me the opportunity to be on this advisory council doing this important work that I truly feel is my life's mission, honestly. I'd also like to thank Governor DeWine for your unwavering dedication to improving the foster care system over the trajectory of your career. It's just been amazing to see your dedication to ensuring that youth like me get the best chance to have the best possible outcomes. To be sure, the issues that we were asked to grapple with over the past year, they weren't simple issues to solve. The child welfare system involves a delicate balance of very complicated family dynamics and interests. And it feels like we are always trying to rebalance these interests to make the system work best for children. The listening sessions that Governor DeWine mentioned that the advisory council sat through last fall and winter could sometimes be brutal. Sometimes there wasn't a dry eye in the room. But I think what's made this process so unique is that the advisory council has taken the time to listen to and incorporate feedback, not just from the child welfare professionals, which is crucial, but also those with lived experience. And while those listening sessions could be hard to hear, it was both an honor and a necessity to bear witness to the experiences of the people who are impacted by the policies that we are setting forth. But we didn't just listen to their stories and let the professionals make recommendations based on those stories. We invited those with lived experiences, like myself, to actually join the council and to weigh in on these important recommendations. I'm impressed with how we've waded through these issues over the past year to build consensus around these recommendations. As a former foster youth, I am particularly proud to see recommendations such as the statewide ombudsman to ensure that youth and families have that impartial third party to address their concerns. I think this is especially important in a county-run system like ours. Strengthening normalcy standards so that youth in foster care can have as close to a normal teenage experience as all the other kids. And then finally, focusing on permanency to keep youth from aging out without a permanent family. Having been adopted around my 18th birthday, I know how important it is to have a family to make that successful transition into adulthood. I believe these recommendations will move us towards a child welfare system that works best for all children involved, and I look forward to helping carry these recommendations forward into action in any way that I can. Thanks, everyone. Now I'm going to hand it over to the Ohio Department of Job and Family Services Director, Kimberly Hall.
Thank you, Melinda. We're very grateful to you for sharing your perspective and grateful to all of the advisory council members for lending their special expertise, personal experiences, and unique backgrounds to this effort. I truly cannot thank all of you enough for the many long hours and challenging discussions that you engaged in to comprehensively review Ohio's children's services and foster care system and arrive at these recommendations. Continuing the momentum that you started will be a top priority. It will require continued collaboration with our county children's services agencies, foster youth, parents, caregivers, the private sector, cross-system agencies, association leaders, and elected officials. Please know that I am 100% committed to this effort. Our next steps at the Department of Job and Family Services will include communicating a core governance structure to help us lead this work, defining the implementation strategies, ensuring community involvement, and designing the necessary metrics to monitor improved outcomes. I look forward to the next phase of our journey as we work together to ensure lasting change for Ohio's children and families. Thank you, Governor, Children's Services Transformation Director Christy Burry, and Children's Initiatives Director Leanne Cornyon-Smith for your courageous leadership and dedication to this very important work. And thanks to everyone out there listening for being here today. With that, I will now pass the virtual microphone back to you, Governor.
Well, thank you very much. We're very, very excited about this. This is really culmination of a lot of work by a lot of people for a long time. But now a different phase starts, and that is, you know, working with the state legislature to implement this, and at the same time, starting through our administration to do what we can do and those parts of that that we can implement directly. So we will start by doing that. Anyone who would like to see the full report of recommendations may visit jfs.ohio.gov. That's jfs.ohio.gov. We'll have questions in a moment. Let me, on a completely unrelated issue, I just received the resignation of Sam Randazzo as chairman of PUCO. I want to thank him for his work. He has done very, very good work as chair. I appreciate that very, very much. He indicated to me that he felt, in regard to recent events that have occurred, the FBI search of his home, coupled with the FEC filing yesterday, that he would, going forward, in his words, be a distraction from the work of the PUCO, and felt that this is the best thing for him to do. So I thank him for his service very much. Happy to go to questions.
Governor, your first question is from Tom Bosco with ABC6.
Tom. I don't think we're getting Tom on here, guys.
We can circle back to him. Next question is from Molly Reed with WKEF.
Sorry, I had to get unmuted. So here in Montgomery County, obviously, Governor, we've been paying attention to Children's Services for some other reasons. I just want to see, you know, how those recent events also played into these conversations and the transformation of Children's Services across the state.
Well, I've been interested in what goes on in Children's Services since the time I was an assistant prosecutor in the early 1970s in Greene County. And I will say that ever since, anytime there's been high profile cases, great tragedies, it's impacted me. So what has happened, you know, whether it's in Cincinnati or whether it is in Dayton or Cleveland or wherever it is, you know, these tragedies, I always look at this and think, you know, that's our child. We have a responsibility to that child, and something went wrong. Something went tragically wrong. So yes, what has gone on in Dayton has had an impact on me. We just have to do better for these kids. And we have children's service workers who are working very, very hard. They have to make very difficult decisions. We have juvenile court judges who have to make horribly difficult decisions as well. So, you know, what we want to do is provide all of them the best help that we can. And I think the most important thing, if I could just say one thing, every decision that gets made needs to be made with the best interest of that child. And while adults are important and adults have rights, the rights of the child need to come first above anything else. I've seen tragedies in you know, they don't get reported as tragedies many times, but a child who lives with foster parents who want to adopt her, lived with only parents the child's ever known. And then after a few years, system decides to take her away and back to an aunt or back to, or not back to, but to an aunt or an uncle or a parent. And that child is only known these parents, and it's been the foster parents who that child has known. That's just one example of something that just tears at my heart. So these are tough decisions, but we have to focus on children.
Governor, we will circle back to Tom Bosco with ABC6.
Sure, Tom.
Oh, hi, Governor. Can you hear me?
Hi, Tom. Sure.
Thanks. Sorry, I was having trouble unmuting myself. Very quickly, if I could squeeze two things in on unrelated issues to this press conference. Bill 311, still the plan is to veto that. What is the timetable on that? And also, with the delay and the backlog that the Ohio Department of Health is having, calculating the number of cases, do you worry that the public may not see that asterisk and may be misled a bit on where the numbers truly are?
Yeah, I think, first of all, the numbers that the public sees are exceedingly high. What I indicated yesterday is that they're really even higher than that. So I guess I don't worry because the public is already seeing high numbers. But let me explain it maybe in a little more detail than I did yesterday. As of yesterday, we had about 12,000 cases that had not been cleared. And by clearing, it means a call has to be made. And to determine, you know, whether or not, for example, that person might have had symptoms, or whether that person had contact with someone who we now know had the virus. And so it's a double check. It's a second check on an antigen test. The CDC a while ago really changed how these were to be reported. And the CDC has said you can report these directly as probable cases without doing that checking. Up until Monday, we were checking all those. We continue to check them at this moment. And that was working. We were checking them and we could keep up. But the problem we're seeing is the problem that has been seen in other states. And that problem is they can't keep up because each one of these may necessitate one call, two, three, four. You know, you got to keep trying to reach that person. So we are going forward, and we're going to announce when we make that break. And the director, Cloud, will make that. I talked to her just a few minutes ago, and she'll make that announcement in the next day or two. But at some point, we will switch over and do what the vast majority of states, maybe all states, as far as I know, are doing, and that is following the CDC guidance. We were trying to be more precise, more careful. I am told that of the cases that are checked, better than 90% of them, we come back and confirm. So most of these cases are going to get confirmed when we go out and check them. Going forward, we're going to follow the CDC's guidance, which is do not check those. Take those and report those. And we report them separately so anybody can see the probable cases separately from the other cases. So, Tom, I missed you. Now I've gone off on the second question. What was your first question? I apologize.
House Bill 311, your timetable on that. When will that reach your desk? And you're still planning to veto that, correct?
Look, we're going to veto anything. I mean, let's set the stage. We're in the middle of a 100-year pandemic. We've not had anything for 100 years like this. This is not the time to be going in and stripping the health department of powers going through this pandemic. And as I talked about yesterday, it's not just for now. It could be in a year, 2 years, 5 years, other scenarios that come up where the health department would need to move and move very quickly. This is just very misguided legislation. So whenever it reaches, I don't control when it gets to my desk, but when it gets to my desk, I'll veto it.
Governor, next up, we have Jim Province with the Toledo Blade.
Hey, Jim.
Hi, Governor. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Great. I'm curious as to how the foster care system itself, particularly the congregate home settings that you were talking about earlier, how were they affected by COVID while this investigation or review was going on? And did that expose any weaknesses in the system that otherwise might not have been seen?
Okay, I'm going to turn to our team and see who can answer that, whether that might be Christy or Melinda or the director. Anybody have an answer in regard to that? Christy? Yeah, we can't hear you, Christy. Nope.
I know, I had a box that somebody needed to unmute me. Thank you, Governor. As it relates to congregate care, I mean, just even before this pandemic, what we do know is that Ohio, unfortunately, has experienced a significant increase in the number of children who are in those congregate care settings or facility type placements in order to receive treatment. So we already know that we want to increase the capacity of family-based settings for children in Ohio that are able to provide loving homes for our kids and meet their needs. As it relates to the pandemic, yes, as we had to scramble as it relates to PPE and address our new normal with COVID, it became even more clear that this is definitely a priority for us to continue moving forward to ensure that we don't have kids that are in those type of placements in congregate care settings unnecessarily, so that we can increase the number of kids that are in those family settings.
Thank you.
Governor, next up, we have Drew Simon with WHIO.
Morning, Governor.
Morning.
We had a case here, a major case of alleged child abuse in the Miami Valley involving Dakota Collins. He was beaten and, according to court records, subjected to other child abuse, like being submerged in water. Now, that case has prompted changes here locally, and we've learned combined communication efforts from Children's Services, police and courts are needed to improve to make sure that parts of these cases don't fall through the cracks. Now, what specific changes are being made to prevent cases like Dakota's and those children from becoming victims of violence? And specifically to you, Governor, how much was this case a driver for what you wanted to see improved at the state level? And secondly, has the state made any changes with how it communicates with law enforcement and courts about these kind of cases? And if so, how?
Well, it certainly did impact me. As I indicated earlier, any of these cases that I read about or that my team briefs me on certainly impact me. I mean, we have seen, they know that they're to report to me if we have a death, for example, in one of our counties, something that is, would rise to just any kind of tragedy, I get a report on. It's usually an oral report. So yes, absolutely. When you see these just horrendous, horrible, horrible stories, where your mind goes first is, what could have been done to stop that? And, what we have instituted, is that kind of a review, that we expect to see that kind of a review anytime that you get a tragedy. So I'm going to refer to Christy for any other comments in regard to this.
I can just add that I think I highlighted when I was just running through some brief comments about the recommendations, in that we're going to take a deeper look at the front door of our agency. So take a deeper look at the hotlines where people are initially calling in reports of concerns for maltreatment, both from mandated reporters and both just from the general public. And that opens the door for us to really scrutinize that process, the decisions. And I'll add in too that any of this work that we're talking about with transformation and needed change with Children's Services is not just about the Children's Services agency itself. As you even pointed out, our children and families within our communities, especially those kids and families who are experiencing challenges or have a variety of risk factors, they touch many different systems, the schools, private providers, the courts or what have you. And so we really have to think about these needed changes across all of our systems. You mentioned law enforcement and the way in which we're sharing information and communicating. And within this report, we tried to elevate that focus on the needed training and needed to make sure that we're all on the same page with all of the work that we do across all of our system with kids and families.
And let me just say to add, it's to state the obvious, it's important that we financially support our children's services. One of our goals has been to increase the amount of money coming from the state to local children's services with the help of the legislature and their great work. We have been able to do that, but we have to continue to do that. As we look at future budgets, you know, we have to prioritize children's services. They're at the front line. Like most things in Ohio, these are services that get delivered locally. These are local people, local counties that are dealing with these challenges. And so we can certainly help from the state. One way we can help is by making sure they have additional funds.
Governor, next up, we have Parker Perry with Dayton Daily News.
Good morning.
Morning.
I wanted to talk about the ombudsman system and the discussions happening with that. In particular, I'm sure there's more information in the reading material, but how that system might be implemented and how that system might operate. I imagine when you're dealing with children and parents that there's a lot of disputes between children's services and the family. How do you envision the ombudsman system actually working? I mean, is there a concern that it might be an overload? And also, I wanted to ask, what's the first tangible change do you guys anticipate taking place as a direct result of the advisory board? I know you said that there's some things that's already been being discussed and maybe even already implemented.
Yeah, Christy, you want to take that about that position and how we envision that?
Sure. We've already done exploratory work in this space as it relates to researching other states and other jurisdictions. And most other states have a statewide, some type of statewide ombudsman, even those other states that are county administered like we are here in Ohio, as the governor pointed out. What we know is that in some of those models that they may be housed within the governor's office, and some of those models may be housed within the judicial branch or with the attorney general's office. I know has been another advocacy point by our Ohio Youth Advisory Board as to considerations to explore that. And then in some circumstances, it may be within human services. So those are some of those next step decisions that will be made as far as mapping out some proposals, and those decisions do include some of those financial support decisions and considerations that the governor mentioned, and we'll start picking up with that with those next steps with implementation.
Okay. Thank you.
Governor, that was your last question of the day.
Well, again, thank you. I want to thank everybody who's worked on this. Our big job is ahead as we go to implement this, and we look forward to working with the legislature. We have people in the legislature who have really almost made this a one of the most important things that they do, and who have a real, real passion for this. And so that relationship, we look forward to working with the legislature. Many of them were directly involved in putting this report together. I know from the time I became governor, we started talking with members of the General Assembly about this. So we look forward to that discussion. We look forward to that work. We look forward to them taking these recommendations that need legislation and working on them, improving them, doing whatever they can. But I think that, our commitment must be that this has to be a priority. Our commitment must be that we need to move forward. Status quo is not acceptable. not acceptable when we have so many children who age out of foster care, who never have parents, who never were adopted. That is not acceptable. Too many of our foster kids are moved from home to home, from place to place. Reducing that is significant. Upping our adoptions, having a real focus on adoptions county by county. The Dave Thomas Foundation is doing, wonderful work, but we've got to expand that work. One of the things that they do is pay for a person to go into a county, and that person's job is to focus on adoption. And the caseworkers many times are so overwhelmed with just triaging, trying to deal with the current crisis. There's no time to sit back and try to figure out, okay, how can we match this child with a loving family? And so having someone whose sole job is to do that and focus on that is important. So expanding that to all 88 counties is something that's very, very significant. So a lot of work to do, but there's no more important work, and it must continue and has continued despite this pandemic. A lot of the very important work that we do, we have to continue to focus on through this pandemic. And so I, again, want to thank the council for keeping this thing going during the pandemic, getting us the report and helping us move forward. So you can pull this down. We thank everyone, thank the council, and that'll be the end of the press conference. Thank you very much.